I let you. I've got like a little gap to actually work on lots of projects, which is really nice because usually I have lots of stuff happening in the weeks, but at the moment there's like space, which
How
is lovely.
do you use this space and the moment of silence, or whatever you can call this process? What's your routine of relaxation or having a time with yourself?
Going for walks is really important. Luckily I live right next to a nature reserve, so I can like go on a little walk in the forest and like roll around on the hills a little bit, which is nice. I mean, playing piano is really kind of relaxing and cathartic, and because it's the instrument that I've known the longest. I started learning when I was five, I think, so it's very kind of like you can just let things out.
I guess so. Reflecting of on your childhood, could you take us back to when you first discovered the transformative power of the sonic world and music? What was your musical environment like during that time, and how did it shape your early experiences and perception of sound itself? Because when you were five and you're already have your connection with music as a,
I mean, it wasn't so much a discovery of music. I think music was kind of always there for me. My mum also played piano, and her mum played piano, and my dad had music playing in the house all the time. We always had like Tom Waits or like Philip Glass or something. So it was, it wasn't really a case of discovery. That was just the world that I was sort of brought into, which was really lovely. Transformative element. When did that? It's
Yes,
hard
because
to.
sorry for the interruption, but
No.
you're pointing out the very interesting process, because it seems like your parents had already, set up some kind of musical environment for you, not initial, but that's how it works. But was there a moment when you discovered that, no, this, I need to find my own way, I have to make my own choices of what I want to do with music or what I want to listen? When you decided to escape this influence that was there already.
I mean, I guess the first kind of rebellion in a way was I must have been like, I don't know, 14, and started listening to metal, which was like very different to what my parents were into, and it was a real, they avidly hated it.
Not so academically, not so
No,
polished and
exactly. And I was like in with a group of friends who it was. I had just got into high school, or had been in high school a few years, and had like discovered metal through Tumblr and stuff, and was going to like there's a club in Exeter where I grew up called the Lemon Grove, and it always had like it had Bring Me the Horizon, Cancer Bats, like all of these sort of like thousands metal bands, and it was and also really weird stuff. It had what's he called, Unicorn Kid, doing all
Okay,
this like 8-bit chip tune and stuff. So it was really like scene kid music. We all had kind of like Drop Dead, everyone's wearing neon colors. It was very like original scene, which I'm quite proud of. So I guess that was sort of the first foray into other stuff. And then that led to sort of like club music through dubstep, because there's all these sort of like alt links and stuff through Tumblr, and sort of the scene at the time. And
So
then
internet really helped you in this process, like.
definitely, I think, well, that was my only way of discovering things that weren't in my immediate world. But it was still, I mean, when I was a teenager, it was an earlier form of the internet, I guess. But yeah, equally kind of mind opening, I guess, world opening.
You have mentioned that you are originally from this southwest part of England, right? It's really close to Bristol as well. and known for its rich history in music and unique sound aesthetics. Could you elaborate on your connection with this Bristol sound, if you have one? Because, and also, have you actively chosen to incorporate elements of it into your music lately, or do you perceive it as a reference point that you prefer not to base your creative process on? Because it's really, I feel like sometimes it can be the pressure when you have when there is this strong influences coming from the cities and sound, and you kind of are part of this, you are growing up with this influence, and then you need to find your own way. And sometimes you like, oh, I don't need, I want to be me, and please keep yourself out of my role. But sometimes you can take something and make it and elaborate it into something quite
Yeah, absolutely.
different.
I
And
think
so
there's
what was
elements
your
of both.
approach?
I think there's elements of both. I think, like, growing up in Exeter, which is maybe like an hour and a half from Bristol, it doesn't have this the same kind of music history at all. But I was like, I was playing in an orchestra, and I was learning like classical piano for a bit, which was really helpful in terms of like learning actually how Western music works. But there comes a point where it becomes kind of too rigid, and you get really, really kind of stuck in things. So that's what a lot of what I make music for now is about. Is about trying to get away from and create new kind of forms of expression that aren't stuck into this sort of like institutionalized structure. But then the Bristol thing is really interesting. I because. The history here is amazing, and that's why lots of people, musicians in particular, move to Bristol, is because there's sort of like there's sort of this history of reggae because of the Jamaican diaspora, and then that became trip hop in the 90s. So there's and you have like Massive Attack, Portishead, all of that, and then even since then, like so much of the UK's freshest music always comes out of Bristol, just because you have so many people with such different backgrounds coming here for music. You get this sort of like hybridized genres, things always coming together from completely different aspects and backgrounds and creating something new, which I think that element in particular, despite the actual genres, that is what I find really inspiring. I've spoken about it before, where you have like I think one of the first events that I played in Bristol, it was me, Ava Akira, who's this kind of like internet girly, and then Boofy as well, who's a grime artist, and then Container, the techno DJ, like all on the lineup together, which is just bizarre. But it like Bristol really fosters this kind of melting pot idea of hybridizing things. And I think, yeah, that's what's really inspiring about it. And that I take into my practice a lot. Sort of, yeah. I'm trying to think of another word than hybridizing, but that's all I got.
And also you have mentioned the preferences of the Western music, and one of the characteristic of this Western music is the manifestation of masculinity sometimes, and most of the times as well, because that's a tradition. And during your teenage years, as explore different scenes, it's likely you encounter these manifestations of masculinity and its potentially negative impacts as well. So could you share how you begin to infuse your queer perspective into your music and scene? Additionally, were there any artists who served as a significant influences in shaping this approach and finding your own way into this, masculine world?
Yeah, I mean, I encountered that a lot. It was at the time I was identifying as male, but was like there was definitely something going on. I went to DBS College in Plymouth to kind of like study music production for a little bit, and everyone else in the class was this like super bro-y mask. Like everyone's straight, everyone's cis, and there were, I think in the entire college there were three girls,
Really?
which is crazy. And it's like
Yeah, it's.
a music college. So I spent a year there and realized that there wasn't really kind of space for me or what I wanted to do. Because everyone wanted to make like drum and bass and big room house, they tailored the classes towards that. So I was just in the back, like, I don't want it. This isn't what I
Yeah,
want.
crazy.
Crazy. So yeah, after I spent a year there and then I dropped out because I didn't want to be there. And then I moved to London because lots of friends were and I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was like, let's do this, it'll be fun. And that's when living in London, I was finally able to kind of experience queer community and nightlife and things because that didn't exist in Exeter at all, really.
Yeah.
We had one really sad gay bar, and it was just mostly straight people inside anyway.
Yeah.
So London was like
Please.
an absolute dream. Finally going to like Dalton Superstore and yeah, Sync the Pink and Vogue Fabrics and all of this kind of stuff back in the day. And that,
Yeah.
yeah, that was
Yeah.
sort of my first interaction with like avid queerness, I think. And also, weirdly, my mum for my birthday is at some point back then bought me Zen, the first Arca album on CD
Oh,
for Christmas.
really? I
Because
was.
she was in HMV looking for, I think it was Actress or something that I'd put on my list because I didn't know Arca at the time. And one of the people who worked in the shop suggested it for her. So actually my mum introduced me to Arca, which is so funny.
And that album, it was crazy strange for me when I first listened to it. And
Seriously.
I, well, me and my friend was having a, informal musical course. We had the students and everything, and I always keep bringing this album to them because all of them are studying, the piano, the classical music, the conservatories, and everything, and always I wanted to give them something that penetrates their, mind and their soul, and the Zen was quite important. And that's great because Ark actually was one of the very first artists that gave me this weird, for me it was weird but very influential, let's say, points and world of, because the queerness was different in here. I mean, I'm based in Tbilisi, and this queerness and its, relationship with the femininity was really a thing here. Because when you are queer, you are feminine, and this when you are feminine, femininity in this traditional world I was living in was, quite different, but from what Arca brought, because the Arca's music was loud. Her music was penetrative. Her music was dominant. Her music was, quite strong,
Yeah,
which was really
absolutely.
different for what we heard about this queer world and femininity's connection. And that was really the point when I had my awakening that, yeah, it can be like this, and still queer, still feminine, but like this, and not La 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 and Pinky and everything and everything. And it was really important for me. And then when I discovered Sophie, it was completely blown up moment, because I and the my actually my last Facebook post was that RIP post to Sophie, because I then I completely stopped writing and doing everything, because that was the moment when I discovered that world is never going to see what her real potential was, because it was the exact moment when I was waiting that here now she's ready to conquer the world. The pop music, everything and everywhere should be under the umbrella of what she was creating with her music. And it was completely, disastrous night for me and for lots of people. And no, it doesn't matter if you are part of queer community or not. It was really sad day for. And also, I know that you also had a, let's say, privilege to play the event, to
Yeah,
a tribute
absolutely, with
event to
Club
Sophie.
Quarantine.
And can you Can you also tell me more about your connection with maybe Sophie and Arcus Music and this new wave of queer artists who are doing really good at in their own terms? I mean, in experimental music, but also I love to see them penetrating the pop music and mainstream culture with music because I was really happy to see Sophie producing for Madonna and Vince Staples and Kendrick, because that's what this music needs. That's what the mainstream music needs, to have such characteristics, to have someone with different past, someone with different approach, then different sensitivities, different feelings. And because this mainstream music otherwise is just like, the plastic and just doesn't have this depth. So let me more let me know more about your connection with those artists as well.
I mean, Sophie, I remember first discovering when I was in college, not the music college, I went to a different one before. And I remember being sat in the library and someone showed me Bit on YouTube, and I was like completely blown away because it was, again, it's like nothing I'd ever heard before.
Yeah.
Just
Do you
this
have your
like
favorite releases from Sophie?
I mean, Bip is probably up there. It really like it changed everything. It was
Yeah,
crazy.
Bip. Yeah.
And then I love Not Okay from Oil of Every Pulse on Insides. That
Yeah.
one that's like ding ding ding.
Yeah.
That's really fun. Yeah. But yeah, it really was it changed everything, I think. PC music, and particularly Sophie. And I didn't necessarily realize at the time the queer connection, because like they were all sort of like faceless names. No one really
Yeah.
knew who they were, and it was all just sort of like it could be anyone, we don't know. And
Yeah.
it wasn't for another kind of like, I don't know, I guess 5, 10 years that like the personalities started coming out of
Yeah.
PC music. We actually really realized who these people were. Especially like Sophie, I think. Sophie came out as trans in like, well, came out, but Sophie let everyone know at, I think it was only like 2018 or something,
Yeah,
2018,
it was the
2019.
It's Okay to Cry video came out. It was 2018, yeah.
Which, and like, she'd been making music for the last like 10 years before that, nearly. So, yeah, and the fact that they were like both Arca and Sophie and lots of other amazing producers have been making music for such big names. Yeah, you say Madonna, like Charli XCX,
Bjork, Kanye West,
FK
and
Twigs, Björk, yeah, of course. It's like you say, it takes a lot of different kind of backgrounds and perspectives to make this really rich and like fertile experience with music, I think. And it's always like the best pop musicians who have the best underground producers making their music. Do you know what I mean? And
absolutely, absolutely.
it's also really fun watching this kind of this interesting trajectory where often you'd have like in the 80s or something, you'd have like pop musicians who now are making experimental music, like Ryuichi Sakamoto or like Brian Eno or someone like that, where they started off in the pop world. And then they've moved into like ambient experimental kind of stuff. But now there seems to be the opposite trajectory where you have people starting off in experimental music like Arca or like 103 Point Never, and now they're like all over pop music. It's really
Yeah,
fun. I really like it.
actually, Daniel Lapotin was the musical producer of Weeknd's halftime show or something
Yeah,
like.
exactly.
It's huge something, because I
Isn't it
remember
crazy?
when I first see Sophie performing, it was 2015 at Sonar Festival, and at this point I still did not know the who was Sophie in the on the stage, because there was QT and some PC
It's
music
like five
guys.
people.
Yeah, five people running, doing this music, and I was like, what's going on right
Which one
now?
is Sophie?
Yeah, but and the second time it was 2021, and she was different, completely different, and you can tell that she was going to, to never stop and do, because show was different, still transgressive, still provocative and everything, but the scale was different and the influence was different and room was different, because I had the same feeling about the Eve Tumor when I first listened to his ambient live. It was 300 people around the club, and the second time when I listened to him, it was the full band. And it's always interesting to see artists evolving and creating these layers and layers of their music. Mm-hmm. My favorite moment is when some pop stars or the big labels are starting noticing them and trying to put them, you know, into their agenda, and they are still penetrating them and hurting in different way. And it's always funny to see as well. Also, I really wanted to hear more about your debut album as well, because you have previously expressed an interest in being in, you know, your mixes and initial releases with these narrative elements. I mean, could you elaborate on how the concept influences your approach to creating albums and mixes as well? Because I listened to Fat Mix prior to this interview as well. Mm-hmm. And how do you weave this storytelling into your music, and what themes or narratives can listeners expect to encounter in your debut album? Because it was years ago, but still, when first step into this world, what can we see there?
I mean, it's an interesting one. I think my approach to storytelling through music is sort of a bit of a reverse. There's not a narrative before. It's very instinctive, and I follow the thread that the music is leading.
Intuitive, you can say.
Yeah. I'm sort of, I don't know, I'm plucking at things and seeing what sticks, and then a storyline reveals itself afterwards, rather than having something in mind before. I try and meet a project where it wants to be met. So I'm constantly rising up to the point where the music is to find it. And then that's what creates this kind of weaving storyline where it's this reverse approach almost. And lyrics become like atmosphere, and it's the transitions and the key changes and things which actually become the characters, if that makes sense. It's everything is
And even the title of your album is kind of made up world of your, you know, intuitive thing, right?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's just a misheard lyric, which I thought was quite fun. There were so many other names I was going to go with, and then at the last second I was like, no.
I changed. And also I heard there was an allusion with Jason and Argonauts, right?
It was the name, the Horgonite, it was from, there's a track by Tom Waits called Cemetery Polka, and one of the lines is independent as a hog on ice.
On ice, and this hog on ice is
a kid, Horgonite. Yeah, and I think also because having seen Jason and the Argonauts, like the old 80s movie, when I was a kid, I am not really remembering it that well. I always kind of linked the word Argonauts to the Hydra, like that
creature.
Big kind of creature with all the necks, and so Argonaut, Horgonite, all these, so it just sounded like a big monster, and I was like, that's kind of a good representation of the sound of this album. I want to kind of like burst out of the ground with like clay and metal and leather and all of these pipes and necks and this big sort of like loud musical beast.
And it really resonates your album sonically, because there's moments where you can easily notice this metal influence, but there's something then really quiet, and this something coming from classically trained guy as well. This, you know, sometimes the right silences, the moment of relaxation, and then boom again, and these twists and turns are really important in this storytelling. And then one, I have to mention this fun fact, because this the myth of Jason and Argonauts ends up in a place where they are seeking to find this golden fleece, and this historical place is let's say, maybe 40 kilometers away from where I was born. Yeah,
Oh, no
it's Plexi,
way.
it's the same place. It's
That's amazing. Have you been? Have you looked for the fleece?
So it's and culturally, sometimes you see this myth from different perspective, and for us and for the people, it's something like someone came to our land and take something away from us. And
Hold something. Ah.
yeah, and for the rest of the world, it's a very different story. They have sympathy with this Jason and the people around him going on. But for us, it's really different because he kind of stole something really important from us. And also, yeah, there's lots of different interpretations. So when
That
I
is so
heard about
interesting.
this Jason and seeing, I was like, okay, I have to mention that this place is right next to our first place. And yeah, sometimes,
That's so crazy. Wow.
because
I
it's
love that
called
even
his.
myths have like kind of like politics involved.
It was really, really influential myth because you can really see your this place in ancient mythology and so on and so on. Also, I have heard a really interesting fact that you have mentioned previously that you don't enjoy rehearsals and never rehearse your set before you go to the public. So when performing in front of diverse audiences in various settings, is also we can find this link with internal festival. Do you tend to adapt your performance to align more closely with this audience's background and preferences, or is your primary objective to invite them into your artistic world regardless of their initial expectation and so on and so on?
I mean, the one of the reasons that I haven't rehearsed this show is because all of the spaces are so different every time. Like it's a there's a completely different crowd. Even the shape of the room is completely different. Like the time that I'm playing, like every element about it is different every single time. So if I get stuck in rehearsing it a particular way, then I'm gonna run into problems and not be able to do certain things. So I try and leave it as open as possible. The backing music and the order of the tracks is usually the same unless I feel like making some changes beforehand. I mean, it was for the tours. The individual shows that I have coming up actually are all different. But the movements and the live instrument moments are all dependent on the vibrational space of the room and the number of people and kind of the energy from the crowd shape, and all of these different elements will affect it. And also like how my day has been, like what I've eaten, like all of this kind of stuff.
It's
Yeah, I think
personal
it's,
aspect,
yeah, exactly. I think it's that there's definitely a world that I'm bringing people into, but mostly it's me, like I'm watching the performance as well. Me and the audience are seeing this. I can't remember who said this quote, but it's something about the performer and the audience witness a rising. So something coming up which is created between the two of them,
Yeah, they are
which is
both
really
contributing something to make it happen.
Completely. And that's what makes the show so special. Even when you do it like 15 times in a month for a tour, every single one is different. And that's what makes it like,
Yeah, exciting every time.
it's something like exactly.
You said that there's current projects you are working on, and let us know more what can we expect from you in nearest future in terms of releases or pro shows or collaborations, etc.
So I'm doing a few little shows here and there, like festivals and things, which is quite fun. But I'm about to, I haven't started yet, I shouldn't say that. I'm about to start working on a new release. Hopefully, because I decided not to go on any tours this year because I want to have time to actually practice to start rehearsing and make some new music. And I want to like I've been having a really good time, but I want to shake things up. I want to change how I approach things, just to try something else, and see what can happen. So I'm kind of in research phase at the moment, sort of like sending tendrils out into the world and seeing
Taking
what's
your
around.
time and preparing for something really important.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so gestation research, learning, soaking things up, that's the mood at the moment. But this year is going to be very much working on that new release. So that's exciting. But I also, yeah, I'm kind of, because I now finally have some time, I really wanted to do this last year, but I didn't have any time because I was touring for the whole thing. But I'm collaborating lots for the first time ever. Like I've never really done, apart from playing in an orchestra or in like a band when I was a teenager or something, I've never brought this kind of music world, which is incredibly personal and really specific. I've never sort of opened that up to other people before. And I actually had a really exciting residency last week, which was with another artist, Bethany Lay, who we've never worked together before, but we were sort of put in a studio for 3 days, and it was just like, do whatever you like for 3 days.
Messing up with sound in there is
Yeah,
really.
completely. But I also didn't have a laptop. My laptop wasn't working at the time, so it was really kind of like there was zero tether. I was just like thrown out into the air and just sort of like trying to find some ground somewhere. And yeah, Bethany is a really incredible artist and wonderfully positive and things, which sort of created this new ground for me for those 3 days. And yeah, we worked on some really exciting stuff. I'm also doing some bits with other artists, but I can't name any at the moment because
No
it's their
problem, yeah.
releases. But there's a few. Yeah, it's cute. I'm
That's
having a very
good.
good time.
Ceperunt autem illum accusare dicentes.
It's raining today, and I'm just about to forget the train window girl that wonderful day we met. She smiles through the smoke from my cigarette. It's raining today, but once there was summer and you. dark little rooms, and sleeping late afternoons. Those moments descend on my window pane. I've hung around too long, listening to the old landlady's hard luck stories. You out of me, me out of you, we go like lovers to replace the empty space. Repeat our dreams to someone new. Thank you.